Blog Talk Radio.
Podcasting from Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, where people talk for a living, Pittsburgh, the city of bridges, and Minneapolis, the heartland where folks work for a living. Going Mad is a weekly podcast featuring entertaining social, cultural, and political commentary brought to you from the left by Matt, from the right by Alex, and from somewhere in the middle by Darius. And now here are your hosts, Matt, Alex, and Darius.
Good evening, folks. Thanks for tuning in. A shout out to all of our listeners. We appreciate that. Alex, you're with us. Do you want to say anything?
Yeah, it's good to be here tonight. We're trying to live up to the expectations of our fan base and our listeners.
High expectations, really.
Yeah, high expectations.
Very high. So. Yeah.
Yep.
We've heard constructive feedback, sometimes not so constructive, but we've heard feedback, haven't we, Alex?
We have, and we're trying to deliver. So we're doing our best.
We deliver results. We've invested in some new microphones, haven't we?
We have, and I think it's made a huge difference. I mean, I like this.
It's okay quality. I mean, we're not in a studio yet. We're a couple, thousand viewers away from maybe getting that studio quality, but we're inching our way there, aren't we?
Well, yeah, I think we're doing what we need to do, and it's a good upgrade.
We'll get there. You know, things take time, just like it took time to turn around the economy. It takes time and effort, but we get there.
The fake turnaround, you mean? Yeah. That's not the topic tonight, though.
No, so. It's not. And unfortunately, the topic tonight, folks, is a pretty somber topic. We called this edition, this special edition, a turn to the Middle East. And we've talked a lot about terrorism, a lot about ISIS, the Middle East in general. But with the somber news recently of the slaughter, the torture, the massacre, the murder of the Jordanian pilot being held captive for a while by ISIS, we thought that we should pay some attention to it, particularly because, what would you say, a good portion of our fan base stems from friends, family, relatives who experienced the Middle East with us when we were there 2.5-3 years ago. All three of us, Darius is not with us tonight. He has a heavy load with his PhD, but all three of us experienced the Middle East for some time in our lives, a considerable amount of time.
No, that's true. And I think, what's been going on, especially, I guess, what happened over the last couple of days hit home, just because this is really the first time that that Jordan has been really at the center of the, of an atrocity like this.
They had their hotel bombings back in the mid-2000s.
With ISIS,
you're right. With ISIS, this is this brings it to a whole new level. I mean, this is going to be a showdown between ISIS and the king, and we'll get into this later. Excuse me. What I was thinking too before we get into the politics is, for us who served in the Peace Corps over in Jordan for a while, Alex being the country director there, you think about it, it hits home. Those who have served or been to Jordan, it also hits home, a very deep spot with them. It's a very personal feeling reading this news. But I can't help but think while I'm sitting here eating my chocolate chip pie in a temperature-controlled house in the middle of the Midwest, safe from all of the world action, I can't help but think, we're so far removed from this crisis at hand.
I agree with you. I mean, I've been following the crisis since I've been back in the United States. And if you look at what's going on in Syria, I mean, there have been horrific things in terms of the killing of women and children.
Hundreds of thousands dead. Hundreds.
Yeah, I mean, it's awful. It's awful. And I think, so this has been ongoing. I mean, this isn't...
That's right, Alex.
Yeah, I mean, the level of horror really has been ongoing. I mean, I think there are things that we don't have any idea of the types of things that these guys have done. I mean, the difference in this case is that, they filmed it and put it on, put it out there for everyone to see. And, frankly, I mean, I can't imagine, a worse way to die than being burnt to death. I mean, it's horrific.
For folks who don't know the story, who are just turning in, ISIS, a terrorist group, centered in parts of Syria and Iraq, had been for a while expanding their territories and claiming that they were the new caliphate, the Islamic Kingdom. They had captured a few people recently. I think it was two Japanese citizens, one a journalist and one, I don't know if he was an arms dealer, if he was a international military consultant, something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. Suspect. Let's just say that. Suspect. Nonetheless, though, they had captured these two Japanese citizens along with a Jordanian fighter, a pilot, who had been, you know, running sorties, running some missions into Syria. How did his plane go down? I don't even remember hearing. I remember hearing the story that a Jordanian pilot was captured, but how did it go down? Was it shot down or was it a malfunction?
Well, I think that the Islamic State folks say that it was shot down, but the Americans and the Jordanians said there was a malfunction in the plane that caused it to go down. I don't really think we'll ever really know, but I mean,
I don't think we will.
Yeah.
And regardless, a Jordanian pilot who had been, and Jordan was one of the countries along with the United Arab Emirates until recently, who had been assisting America in air missions to disrupt the ISIS kind of bureaucracy and, I don't know, try to diminish their base.
Yeah, to diminish their base, to degrade their, I guess, capacity to gain more territory.
Jordan hesitantly got into this role. It should be said and noted that not all Jordanians were in support of getting involved in an American-led effort. Doesn't mean they don't support, and we should be clear about that. That doesn't mean they don't support the war against terrorism or that they think that terrorism is okay. It just means that they are suspect of being drawn into a war, especially when they see, you know, all their neighbors and what happens when America is involved in it. It's in Iraq, Syria, Palestine, Israel, et cetera.
I tell you, it's interesting. I mean, I saw, I was watching a news program, and apparently the Muslim Brotherhood folks in Jordan last week were out protesting, saying that, you know, this isn't our war.
Yeah.
And, you know, and now I think
they're silent.
They're not silent. They're saying,
really?
I think they've come out and said that, you know, they're with all of Jordan in terms of defeating ISIS.
What?
That's what I've heard. I could be wrong, but that's what I've heard. And it's interesting. I think it's notable that even Al-Qaeda in Yemen has come out with a statement saying that this act shows the deviance of the Islamic State. Well, so even other, you know, there's another terrorist organization has come out to condemn them, what they've done. So
I think they draw, I mean, most news agencies, you know, they have their little Middle East experts who I doubt speak a lick of Arabic, but have been on the news station long enough, they need a position. Most news stations have said that, you know, ISIS has gone too far.
Right.
That this stance, not just humanity, I mean, not when we just think about how far they went with the atrocity and torturing, but strategically, they went so far that they are going to alienate a potential recruiting base and alienate any type or fringe support that they may have had in these Arab countries.
Maybe this will get their funding cut off, you know, from some of the folks that have been funding them.
I doubt it, frankly.
I don't know. I mean, I would hope.
So, folks, we backtracked a bit, but this pilot was captured. And for a while he was being held. Jordan actually started to open up a communication system where they were trying to negotiate for this pilot's release. And as part of that negotiation, they were willing to give back two prisoners, ISIS. I think they were both ISIS prisoners, right? No, one ISIS. Other was connected to Abu Zarqawi.
Zarqawi from Iraq, yeah,
so
right.
He was,
right.
One ISIS fighter, which was a woman, actually, and the other one was tied.
No. It was the person connected to Zarqawi was the woman who was who was a failed suicide bomber for that Jordan hotel bombing.
That's right.
Right.
So two terrorists, one linked to ISIS, mm-hmm. one linked to other terrorist movements. Jordan was willing to give one of these back, one or both.
But I think both. But I'm not entirely sure. I know at least it was the woman that they wanted, but it may have been both.
regardless, Jordan was willing to negotiate. And that's a position that the Western world has taken a pretty strong stance against. When we've had American or British captors, both governments have been pretty reluctant to actually negotiate. Now, families have tried to purchase or buy back the captured folks, but Western governments in general have been very against negotiating with terrorism. It's been one of our nation's policies. Now, Jordan showed that they were willing to negotiate in good faith, I believe, because to say that you're willing to negotiate with terrorism opens you up to further terrorism. So if Jordan was willing to say this outwardly, I do believe that their motives were pure in trying to get this person back and that they would have exchanged terrorists for the pilot.
Well, I think they would have. I think they absolutely would have. I think what the United States did with the exchange of those Taliban prisoners at Guantanamo Bay for the army sergeant that was that may have deserted or was at least being held by the Taliban.
That was the only time we've ever negotiated in recent years, wasn't it?
Well, I think the way that the administration couches it is that we don't want to ever leave anyone behind, so they don't really view it as negotiating.
That's fair. But anyways, Jordan was willing to trade these folks up, get the pilot back.
Mm-hmm.
ISIS, it sounded like for a couple weeks, there was hope, at least in the international media, that a deal would come to fruition and the pilot would be returned. They were talking about spots to drop them off. Of course, Jordan requested proof of life.
Right.
And here's where it got tricky. You know, proof of life never came. And then all of a sudden, you know, Monday night comes, I believe it was. And, you know, Jordan kind of claims that they think he's already passed away or dead. And then Tuesday comes, and I believe it was this Tuesday, the video surfaced.
Tuesday.
A video surfaced where ISIS had shot this choreographed, it seemed like, almost movie-quality short film of ISIS fighters standing around the prisoner, all in their military garb, in formation, music playing in the background, a script read by one of their leaders, and all of a sudden, you know, a man with a torch lighting a gas path to a cage where the fighter or the pilot was inside. And the pilot had been doused, it seems like, with some gasoline or petroleum. And it cuts off there. But there are films on the internet where it shows the whole thing and they burned him to death.
Right, exactly. No, it's horrific.
And they show the whole thing. And it's appalling, I mean, to any human, it's an appalling scene. And even to think about it, but to see it or even just know about it, it's appalling. I think that's why we're doing the episode tonight, Alex. I mean, to folks who've been in Jordan or spend any time there in this moderate Islamic country.
I think a lot of people
It's painful. It's sad. I was sincerely disrupted and saddened and hurt by this.
Well, there are people that, obviously that volunteers knew in Karak, which is where this pilot is from, the area in Jordan. And, I knew people in Karak. I just say it's very sad. It's very sad, and it does sort of hit home in a way.
And it begs the question, I have a few questions. A, what should Jordan strategically be doing now? And I think, Alex and I have two different thoughts on that. We'd be happy to share that. The other thing is, where does America, what role do we have as an ally in Jordan? We use Jordan. Jordan has actually one of the strongest connections to America outside of Israel, especially when it comes to Middle Eastern affairs. They are one of the top recipients of foreign aid. We have one of our largest U.S. embassies there. They provide great military intelligence. Jordan is a strong ally. So what is our role there? What is Jordan's role going forth? And, what does this mean for the Middle East in general?
Well, I think that on the one hand, I think it probably, hopefully frees up the hand of King Abdullah in Jordan, frees his hand to become more actively involved in crushing, ISIS, which is what needs to happen. And hopefully it'll it'll unite, at least unite Jordanians behind him to actually do this, and maybe even other, you know, other Arab states, where they realize the seriousness of this, you know, and what they're capable of. Although it sort of begs the question. I mean, everyone knew what they were capable of. Now, I mean, I think, but this, I guess, because of the tribal. I mean, this pilot came from a pretty prominent family in Jordan as well. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's one of the differences. It brings it home in a different way. So I think it frees his hand up to deal with extremism, probably more harshly, both internally and externally.
You know, I think when I first heard the news, I also agreed with that. I thought this was a perfect opportunity for Jordan to truly take the lead. I also thought that Jordan should go on the offensive, that a country that's as restless as Jordan, dealing with huge refugees populations, combined, these refugee populations are probably equivalent or more than half of the Jordanian population. So they outnumber native Jordanians. Dealing with a large unemployment number, an even larger youth unemployment number. Frankly, the country has seen better days, and hope is diminishing by the day. Meanwhile, you have the Arab Spring all around you. Jordan's in a precarious situation.
It is. No, it
and,
is.
And I think my sentiment when I first heard this was, aside from the pain and frustration of the immediate death of the air pilot, was that this would be a great opportunity for the king to unite the country around one common goal and to snuff out ISIS once and for all.
Well, I think that's the that would be a good goal.
But in order to do that, Alex, there's no way. I mean, we can't just talk airstrikes. I mean, in order to do what I'm saying is that for these folks, for this to be accomplished, I think Jordan needs to go on the military offensive, meaning our ground troops into Syria to root out these terrorists. And I know that's harder. I mean, that's, you know, one of our colleagues, our listeners, avid listeners, said, don't you think ISIS is trying to bait Jordan? Don't you think this whole thing, why would they burn someone on tape, everything like that? Why aren't they trying to bait a larger war?
They may be.
No, they are. I thought it was a great interpretation. Yeah. I think that's diplomatically, that's what's happening here. Strategically, that's what ISIS is looking for. They're looking for a global war of some kind. Right now, they've just been fighting smaller groups, fringe elements of the Iraqi army, small Kurdish resistance groups. They are looking for more legitimacy, and they are looking to expand their territory, hopefully into Jordan too. Well, nonetheless, though, Jordan still has a desire to get it. They need to get in there.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I think it's the. I mean, I think it's probably the right time for that to happen. I didn't realize. I mean, I think I was reading an article in the I guess in Stars and Stripes about this, which is the military newspaper, U.S. military newspaper from the Army, I think, but apparently Jordanians account for 10% of all of the foreigners who've joined different jihadist groups in Syria.
Yikes.
So, I mean, that's, I think, about 2,000 Jordanian citizens have gone to fight along these groups. I mean, not just ISIS, but probably al-Nusra and others as well. So, again, I go back to internally, it seems to me that Jordan, you know, has some underlying problems as well that are going to have to be addressed if they go in on the ground. In Syria.
I think whether or not Jordan wants it, they've been drawn into something now.
I agree with you. I mean, I agree with you.
Because
I mean,
here's the thing. If King Abdullah does nothing, if he would react the way the Western government or France reacted to any kind of acts of terrorism, which we're going to single out this individual who committed the crime, we're not going to get involved in a sticky war, we're not going to, you know, put troops on the ground. If he stays that course, I think he'll face discontent at home. I think the native Jordanian population, who are already suspicious of his close Western affiliation, his Palestinian wife, his you know, substandard Arabic and Jordanian roots, I think they would be in a better position to actually revolt against the regime, and he'd lose his hardcore support that he's had for years.
How do you think how do you think the Jordanian population will deal with casualties coming home?
That's the toughest thing, because right now, you know, it's very easy to rabble rouse and unite around a cause. But you're right, with any war against anyone, especially with ISIS, there are going to be casualties. And what happens when body bags start arriving at home?
Yeah, and that's a good question, because it's not a huge country, and you know the armed forces are made up of a select group of people within Jordan as well, with ties to different tribes and families. So I think it's not so clear to me. I mean, and it's not going to be a short. It wouldn't be. It's not a short war.
Well, we don't know that. I think the immediate war could be shorter, or wouldn't be a long war, but I think you're right that there would be lingering effects of this, and there would be residual effects of terrorism.
Right.
There would be outlashes later on. I think the Jordanian army is fully capable, if they wanted to, of marching into Syria and taking Raqqa, the head base of ISIS. I think they are fully capable of that, especially if America does its job provides air support and tactile bombing.
No, I mean, I think certainly taking away territory and, you know, killing, you know, ISIS fighters would be a good thing on the ground. And I think that's the way you get it done.
We're not going to finish ISIS by just air attacks.
I agree.
And what our main goal here, you know, is, you know, funding the Iraqi army to get back on its feet. That's going to take years. The propaganda war, the State Department is doing a great job with internal propaganda, doing Twitter, all these things. But that takes time as well. If we're looking for immediate and short-term results on the fight against ISIS, the only way to do that is to fight ISIS.
I don't know. And I'm not sure how you allow this type of group to continue operate the way they are.
That's what amazes me. And I think
for years.
Exactly. And I think Americans have a really poor, bad taste in their mouths from the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, but I beg people just to try to recollect what your initial feelings were after September 11th. I know mine were, I was 16 at the time. You know, I would have joined the army that day, and it would have been you don't do that, but I was so emotional that day that attack had happened, that so many people had died. I would have joined the army, and I was looking for, I mean, you saw the way Congress voted. We were looking for any reason to get revenge.
Right.
And that's what Jordan has to be careful about. But what we know is that this isn't Iraq. This isn't, you know, Dick Cheney trying to sell America on a false war. We know this is ISIS. We know who committed this. We know where they are. We know what they're doing. We know what their end goals are. And I guess I'm so frustrated with Obama's reluctance.
I agree. What is the strategy?
The job.
Well, but I don't think there's a real strategy.
I don't think there's a real strategy either. Here's the thing. Of course, we didn't want boots on the ground, and Obama doesn't want to get boots on the ground because A, it shouldn't be our war alone. B, the United Nations has no taste for it, and we don't have Russia to vote it off. NATO's not going to do anything. So what we have to do is try to get our own Arab allies to take account for this and do it. Well, guess what? The Arab ally states don't want to do it because they don't want to piss off anyone in their own countries, and they also don't want to risk any lives. Well, guess what? That all changed this week. When they saw a fellow Muslim being burned to death inside of a cage, it all changed this week.
Well, I think the big question for me is how will this change the Saudi position on this, on their involvement? That would be interesting to see if they actually, you know, step up.
I'd also be interested to see Erdogan's Turkey's position.
Well, I agree. I think Turkey needs to play a more active role as well. I think they have the capacity to end it as well. I think on the ground, when it comes to a ground war.
What's frustrating is that there is an Arab League. Why I mean, for countries that are dealing with so much internal strife, I hate to say this, but wars can also bring a nation together around a united cause.
Yeah.
And if it's a good cause, you know, if it's a valid cause, if it's a cause for humanity, if it's a cause for defending freedom and principle and liberty, then it's a valid cause.
I agree with you.
And I don't understand what the hesitation is from an Egypt, from a UAE, from Saudi Arabia, from Turkey to join forces and come in at all directions and just root these folks out.
Look, I don't think that – I mean, with Egypt, I think Egypt hasn't hesitated to bomb extremists. I think that, you know, there were a couple of, sort of bombing missions that they carried out in Libya recently.
No one's hesitating to bomb. Even UAE and Jordan were bombing before, but we're talking about boots on the ground here now.
I agree, but I mean, I think that, you know, with Egypt isn't a neighbor of Syria and Iraq. Saudi Arabia is. I mean, these countries that where they're bordered, they have a bigger interest in, you know, nipping this in the bud. I think that's my view, at least. That's my view. I mean, certainly Egypt could play a role, but Egypt has huge problems internally as well. And, you know, the president there now is, I guess this is probably going to give him even a freer hand to crack down on folks he's already cracked down on. And he has the problem in the Sinai Peninsula with extremists there. This ISIS thing is a big problem.
It's a big problem, folks, and yes. I just hope that everyone's evaluating that. Jordan, a strong U.S. ally.
And I think that's something that gets lost in the mix a lot. You know, I mean, I think they're one of our strongest allies in the Middle East.
And one of our strong allies regardless.
I agree.
So I think folks should be thinking about that. You had something you wanted to share. You had written something in your journal recently about your son.
No, I think we had this conversation earlier. We have a minute or so to go, but about nature.
End on a light note. So tell us your journal story. What did you write in your diary?
The whole notion of nature versus nurture. I was looking, the personalities of my two sons are so different, and what accounts for that? I mean, one of them is, you know, I mean, you can do anything to my older son, and, you know, he'll forgive you in a minute. My younger son, on the other hand, you know, I'd hate to get on his bad side. Because I'm not sure what he would do. So it's the truth. So, I mean, I don't worry. He forgives me in the end, but I mean, it takes time. You know, so, you know, if someone were to piss him off, you know, good luck. You know, my older son, I think, has a lot of self-control. He's very nice. He's very sweet. The younger one is sweet as well, but he has this, it's just a very different temperament. And, you know, raised by the same two people.
It begs the question. Nature versus nurture.
My view is, I think it's nature. I don't think it has to do with nurture. I think that's just his personality. He's volatile, and if you get on his wrong side, you know, God help you. That's how
if
it
it's
is.
Nature. It also begs the question: is it your nature? Then is this who Alex Boston was as a young child?
No, I'm very, I think actually, to be honest with you, I think my older son probably has more of my personality in terms of forgiving people and, you know, being nice. My wife,
you're
on the
so
other
noble.
Hand,
you're
my
so
wife,
noble,
on the other
Alex.
Hand, no, my wife, on the other hand, you know, she, you know, I mean, she has a bit of a temper. If you get on her wrong side, I think it's the same thing. She has, her personality is more like, you know, more like the little ones. So it's nature.
This show isn't recorded, and at least she doesn't listen to it, right?
Well, I've been
because you might be on her bad side.
She knows this, though. She knows it. She knows it. She knows it. Yeah, she knows this.
Well,
so
tonight,
that's,
folks, it was a somber issue. If you have questions, please forward them in. We'd love to answer them. We appreciate those who are listening.
We do.
We really do, and we don't like doing the show without Darius. But we thought that tonight, especially after the news, that it begged a conversation.
I agree, absolutely. And hopefully, you know, we'll be back next week with Darius in tow.
And who?
Darius.
Oh, in tow?
In tow.
Oh, I haven't heard that saying before.
Well, yeah,
I am from the Midwest, though.
You are from the Midwest. That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
We're simple people. We're very simple people.
Flyover country, right?
So, come on. Hardworking country.
It's hardworking. That's true. Yeah.
Well, have a good night, folks.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right. See you next time.
Yes.